Well, there's a bit of clickbaiting going on at the end of the year in terms of, oh, Sony are dropping OLED and you know, the new flagship's just going to be a mini LED and what's happening. So maybe you could put people's minds at rest here. You're not dumping OLED, are you? You're not forgetting about that technology.
No, especially, you know, we've just launched an OLED model. We've just launched the Bravia 8 as well.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums TV Display and Calibration Podcast for the 13th of May 2024, if you didn't know which year it is. On this edition, I'm joined by regular Jules. Hello, Jules.
Hi, Phil.
And our special guest today is Gavin McCarron from Sony. Gavin, welcome on to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
So as you may have guessed, with Gavin being on the podcast this week, we're going to talk about Hollywood to your home, Sony's messaging this year, cinema is coming home, lens to living room, the new Sony Bravia lineup. We're going to ask Gavin all about it. There's some really interesting technology coming this year. I've already had some sneak peeks, so we'll get into that a little bit in the podcast today. If this is your first time to the AV Forums podcast, then obviously you can listen to us on audio only. You can also see us in person, in video, on our YouTube channel. That is AV Forums Podcasts, the YouTube channel, not our main AV Forums channel. So AV Forums Podcast, go subscribe to that channel. You'll get every episode. And of course, we have a podcast every Monday. And of course, if you enjoy our content, you enjoy our podcast, and you think it deserves a wider audience, then of course you could tell your friends, you could post it to other groups and forums and social and all that kind of thing. Spread it out there, if you will. And who are we? Well, AV Forums, if you're new to us, is the largest AV and hi-fi community, certainly in Europe. And we've been around since 2000. The editorial's been around since 2003. And we create content for you, the end user, with no influence from manufacturers, advertisers, or anything like that. We give you our honest, unbiased, and experienced opinions and knowledge. And of course, we have our industry friends on the podcast as well to talk about new products, which is why Gavin's here. So who am I? I'm Phil Hinton. I'm the editor. I've been around for 20 years. Long time to be doing this. I'm certified and trained by ISFT Checks, PVA, TV reviewer, and also host the podcast, or most of our podcasts and most of our video content. Jules, why don't you quickly introduce yourself for our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, sure. I've been an AV Forums member since 2004 as an enthusiast, and then became professional video calibrator in 2011 with THX, became an instructor with THX, now a PVA also instructor, and do some audio calibration work as well. So yeah, I generally go around the country with custom installers, grading studios, post-production, and in people's living rooms.
Excellent. And our special guest today is Gavin. Gavin, why don't you introduce yourself for our listeners and viewers?
Well, how are you doing? My name is Gavin McCarron. I'm the technical marketing manager for home entertainment for Sony Europe.
Excellent. So we're going to talk about Sony. We're going to get into the new range. But before that, you can win some nice kit in our competition. And Jules is going to tell you all about that. Jules.
Sure. Yeah. You can win the new Project T2 Super Phono turntable worth $559, courtesy of Peter Tyson and Handy Audio. The new Project T2 Super Phono is the perfect deck if you're looking to step up from a starter turntable, and comes with a Sumiko Rainier cartridge, glass platter, and the option of three colorways: gloss black, satin white, or walnut. The competition closes 11:59 p.m. Sunday the 2nd of June. All competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 and who are residents of the UK, so head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Jules. Of course, we also have disc competition. If you want DVDs, if you're retro, Blu-rays, and of course, 4K discs, that's available to patrons and, of course, standard AV Forums members. So head over to that same address, avforums.com/competitions. Some previous winners to tell you about. Jay Rule is a previous winner. Congratulations to you. And we've got some new patrons, The Box, Arthur Yarwood, Gordon Bernard. Welcome along. Thank you very much for your support. And buying us a coffee last week was ReapoMan666 and Beer Bottles. Thank you very much for the coffees as well. Is appreciated. And as we always do, before we get into the main subject today, Q&A feedback from the last TV Display and Calibration podcast, which was on the 8th of April. From YouTube, JackoBoard18 said, "You definitely do an interview with Sony like that." Well, that's exactly what we're going to do today. So there you go. We've answered your feedback on that one. And Steve Darcy 9542 said, fantastic show as always, Phil. Very interesting and informative. Enjoyed every minute. Great that news that Filmmaker Mode is a go-to program. Definitely purchasing a new TV as soon as they are in the showrooms. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the podcast. And of course, we also got some more feedback from I Got Game EAJ. Said, great video, guys. Can you recommend a 2.1 HDMI cable that's really good and won't break the bank? He says he uses AudioQuest Carbon already, but he needs longer cables. Basically, find a cable that is certified for that length and for use of high speed, and make sure the build quality is good, and any cable that meets those parameters should fit your needs. A longer cable runs, just make sure that it has enough power to get over the length that you're talking about there as well. Unlike smaller cables, you do need to make sure the build quality is up to scratch, but they will be certified. So hopefully that answers all your feedback. Thank you very much for your Q&As. And of course, if you've got any questions, we can't answer them live, but you can send them in on the ancient email system, which is podcast@avforums.com, or you can go in the comment section below if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening to the audio-only version, head over to AV Forums, find the forum list. All the way down the bottom, you'll find the podcast forum, find this episode, and ask your question there, and we will answer your feedback in the next podcast. So let's get on to our main subject today. So Gavin is here with us, and we're talking about the 2024 Sony TV lineup. So there was a press event, which was under embargo and under NDA, and we couldn't talk about it for almost a month, but it was great fun. We were taken over to LA. And of course, for full transparency, Sony covered our travel and accommodation and everything else. But that doesn't guarantee our opinions or anything like that. They are obviously unbiased, but it's an opportunity to see the product ahead of time so we can talk about it and see what it's all about. So it was great to see you in LA, Gavin. Great launch event. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So it was at Sony Pictures. You spoiled us by showing us a lot of things. I think one of the highlights of that trip was a Foley artist and actually seeing what happens. And I always thought I knew that, what they did. But when you actually see them perform, it's something else to behold. It was absolutely brilliant. So maybe you could tell our users why you took not just UK press, but worldwide press out there to show off the new models, and why you held that at Sony Pictures.
Well, like, kind of straight away, you kind of nailed it yourself already with the talking about the Foley artist. I think, you know, Sony as a company we're an entertainment company backed up by technology. And this was a really, really good opportunity to talk about cinemas coming home, which is our tagline for 2024, but also kind of illustrate the depth behind that with Sony. I could say behind the scenes, but I'm going to litter with puns throughout the whole thing probably. But it was just a really good opportunity to kind of talk about the support that we give to the creative process, as well as the kind of the end result that you see on a TV as well. And being able to kind of talk about more about the creative process for creators and how ingrained cinema is in Sony. It was, you know, a perfect opportunity to talk about that. And not just the sound Foley stuff, obviously, but there was lots about picture and other sound areas as well. The Dolby Atmos theater. So, yeah, I think for explaining why we feel that our TVs are the best position to bring cinema into your sitting room, Sony Pictures Entertainment Studio Lot is the perfect place to do that.
Well, I guess as a company, Sony, I believe, are the only consumer electronics company that owns a studio. So you have Sony Pictures, you have the studio lot, but you also develop and produce and manufacture the cameras that capture a lot of Hollywood films, and certainly a lot of TV dramas and so on are shot on Sony cameras. And then the products that Jules will be familiar with is the grading monitors. So you also produce those for professionals to work on. So it's not just your consumer electronics at the end of the day. You actually take everybody through from the lens where you capture that all the way to the TVs. So I guess that was the whole idea of LA and the whole idea of Bravia this year and cinemas coming home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a really important point as well, just to show that breadth of experience that we have within the movie industry, within the film industry, that we can then take and apply into our TVs as well. And we do have lots of cross communication with our sister companies like Sony Pictures Entertainment and the professional side as well, of course, which is crucial, about how they feel about our TVs as well, and the kind of the features and the technology that we put into our TVs. How does that technology enable and help get that creator's intent across, get the message of what these producers and directors, cinematographers are trying to create with their films, and how do we make sure that that has been respected and being shown realistically and accurately within the home environment as well. And I think there's like great opportunities for us as a company to talk more about that. And I think the LA event really kind of did that for us. And I, as well as being enjoyable, I hope you did get some kind of education out of it as well. And with regards to things like the support we give to creators and problem solving and helping them get across the message that they want to get across or the experience that they want to get across. A good example of that is with the cameras. So we do have quite a long history, particularly in digital camera for cinema as well, going, way back to working with George Lucas back in the early 2000s. More contemporarily, we've got Top Gun Maverick, which is not a Sony Pictures Entertainment film, but the Sony Venice camera was used in that production as well. And that was answering a very particular problem that the director had that he wanted us to solve. And we worked together with him using the Venice camera and separating the lens from the body so we could actually get six cameras into the cockpit along with Tom Cruise, so we could really, the director could really recreate that effect that he wanted to do. And it's just a really good example of what Sony as a company does to support the creators. And as an electronics company, what we want to do is respect that creator's intent and bring it into the home as well.
And I guess what Gavin's saying here, Jules, is music to most of our audience's ears, because for many years we've been pushing companies to give us that end product at the end of the day and to show us content as it was intended to be seen.
Absolutely. I was going to say, Gavin, preach it, bro. Because that is, as Phil said, that's the message we've been, trumpeting for an awful long time. And obviously, AV Forum's podcast viewers will be familiar with that, but it still needs to be broadcast. It still needs to get out there, we want an accurate mode in our displays that will match the director's intent, that is calibratable. And of course, there's always, other modes in TVs and in consumer TVs that people can play around with. But so long as there's that accurate mode we can use, then I'm happy.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm sure we're going to touch on the Hollywood point as we go through the podcast today. But Gavin, maybe this is your chance to tell us all about the new Bravia lineup and tell the audience about it, and maybe explain the naming convention, first of all, because you have changed that.
Yeah. So we have three new models. I may as well start with the three new models. We've got new flagship mini LED model, which is the Bravia 9, so that sits at the top of the range. One step below that, we have Bravia 8, which is an OLED model. And then underneath that, we have the Bravia 7, which is another mini LED model. So expanding mini LED out throughout, more opportunity for people to get access to mini LED there as well. The naming convention, hopefully you guys feel the same. It's fairly straightforward. It's simple. It's memorable. For the longest time, we've been using very complicated names for our models, XR, A95L, and all the rest of it. So I think this just simplifies the message, keeps it very, very straightforward, and also illustrates that the higher the number, the further up in the range it is. So again, quite simple and quite straightforward for the consumer out there to make it a little bit more understandable about the hierarchy of the model lineup.
Yeah, and it can get confusing for consumers out there with long suffixes and prefixes. And
somebody in marketing's feeling very, very sad for themselves right now, aren't they? What's used to think, who came up with these things? It's very confusing. So this is helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. So let's look at Bravia 9. It is the flagship mini LED TV. So let's look at that in a little bit more detail. Now, this was, I didn't know what I was looking at CES, but this was a demonstration that you gave me while I was out there back in January. And I was really impressed. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about the technology that this TV is using.
Yeah, so obviously the big thing is it's mini LED, but within that we have essentially what's a new backlight system. So it's quite a dense mini LED backlight system. So although we don't tell you how many there are a lot of LEDs in there, and there's a lot of dimming zones. What's important to kind of remember with how mini LED works as well is the LED driver is kind of really essential in telling the LEDs what to do. So there's, I guess there's kind of three parts to it. You've got the processor, in this case, processor, XR processor, and that will then separate the LCD data from the backlight data and send that backlight data to the LED driver. Now the LED driver in this instance is, it's a new LED driver, it's a 22-bit LED driver. So that means it can do a hell of a lot of calculations, basically. Typically, an LED driver might be, I think it was 8 or 10 bits in the industry kind of standard. So a 22-bit one is kind of exponentially more, doing more calculations. And then the third part of it is the LEDs themselves. So in this case, mini LEDs. So what that LED driver is doing is allowing us, it's the world's smallest as well. I'm not sure how important that is to you guys, but it is the world's smallest LED driver. We love our world's first kind of things as well and world's smallest. But what it's doing is very, very powerful. So it's able to control very accurately what the LEDs are doing. And it's able to control a high number of the zones as well. So one of the kind of key crucial things is that calculation between managing the efficiency against the performance. So actually the Bravia 9 is about 20% more efficient, energy efficient than the X95L, whilst being 50% brighter and having three times as many dimming zones. So the LED driver will actually calculate basically the optimum current and light output required to deliver the picture quality that you want. But what it's also doing as well is our backlight systems, it's not a simple on off. You know, you could have a huge amount of LED dimming zones, and if all they're doing is turning on and turning off, you're not going to get the dynamic picture quality that you're looking for. So what our LED backlight driver is doing is also has a lot of different kind of steps of light or gradation of light within it. So it can adjust it much, much more accurately. And also that allows you to reduce quite significantly things like blooming and haloing and that kind of effect. So what we're talking about is very, very high brightness performance. So high overall brightness, but also very high peak brightness, but maintaining the black levels much better than we've been able to do previously. And I would say near OLED level black levels on the Bravia 9. Obviously, Phil, you might think a little bit different on that, but I'm looking forward to getting your opinion on it as well. So for Bravia 9, that's the kind of very much the headline is this this backlight control and mini LED backlight that we're using as well.
And that's the impressive thing. We've been given the opportunity to see the mini LEDs without the front of the panel on. So just looking at the at the rear panel, and we had to wear sunglasses because the light was so bright. But just seeing, just to explain to people, those were on top, and then underneath was the finished TV. So you could see what the finished TV was actually displaying, and then see what the mini LEDs were doing above that. And the gradation that was possible in terms of shadow, in terms of making out objects. And you had a competitor TV sat next to it, and it was really quite impressive to see that. I think the one that impressed me the most was an image of a lantern that had a black pattern on the inside.
Yeah.
And you could make out what the pattern was and so on, just looking at the backlight, not necessarily looking at the screen. Yet the competitor model, you didn't get any of that detail. You didn't get any of that gradation.
Yeah. And I kind of, when I first saw it as well, I was surprised by the performance as well. And one of the things that I really noted was, if you're looking at a fully bright image, actually the backlight on the Bravia 9 is still doing a huge amount of work to deliver the contrast within that kind of bright image as well. Whereas normally you think, okay, it's a bright image, everything's going to be turned on to full or whatever. But actually, there's a lot more subtleties going into it that actually helps with the end picture quality. So it delivers more for that contrast and that sense of depth and feeling of immersion with it as well. So that's, you know, one of the things that kind of surprised me. Obviously, you know, bright objects on a dark background, that's really kind of obvious to see. But actually, in a very bright scene, I was really impressed with that myself as well, which is great.
And Jules, I mean, the way that our eyes work, you know, we're not attuned to the brightest areas of the image. It's more the subtle mid-tones, shadow detail, and so on. And that's important to an image. It's important that, that TV is capable of that. We all talk about high nits and high peak brightness, and it is important to an extent, but it's actually further down the scale where it's really noticeable, Jules.
Yeah, absolutely. We need a significant shift in output to be able to notice that in terms of the bright details. But the subtleties of shadow detail is we're far more attuned to with our visual system. So getting that shadow detail on screen and right is very, very important. Especially obviously as we encourage people to do, which is to sort of dim their rooms down and watch it in a more reference environment to match the creator's intent.
Mm. And you know, let's talk about grading monitors, because this was the inspiration behind Bravia 9. So maybe tell us a little bit about the professional grading monitor that was being referenced, because it is a significant step up in the professional side of the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So the mastering monitor that most people will be familiar with is the HX310, which has been around for a while now, and it's used in the vast majority of movie studios across the world. I'm sure, Jules, you've had much experience with them over the
Just
last...
Just did one 2 weeks ago.
Excellent. Perfect. In November of last year, we launched the HX3110, which is the new mastering monitor. And the big significant difference of that is the fact it can output up to 4,000 nits. So the HX310 maxes out at 1,000 nits. 3110, 4,000 nits. So that's a really significant difference, obviously. And what we're hoping to see is that it will give, again, creators this kind of whole new tool to work with, that they can see the effect of increasing brightness. And it's not only brightness as well. I should point that out. A kind of a side effect almost of increasing the brightness is increasing the color volume as well. And increasing the color volume allows you to get more detail and more natural, true to life picture into your scenes as well. So it'll be really interesting to see. We've had really good positive feedback on the 3110 so far, and actually it uses the same backlight algorithm inspired by the Bravia 9 as well. So there's a nice connection between the two models in particular. And yeah, just allowing, again, the creator side of things to express more about what they want us to be able to see within our picture as well. So that is quite an exciting thing about the 3110 too.
And I think one of the things, Jules, to pick up on with the 3110 as well is that this is a 4K at 4,000 nits. Now, 4,000 nits has been possible in the past with the Pulsar, but the Pulsar was 1080. Uh-huh. It wasn't... You know, we're getting 4K, we're getting this peak brightness of 4,000 uh-huh. nits. Now, I think the public in at large, and maybe some of the enthusiast market, do get mixed up with peak brightness compared to full screen brightness. Now, when uh-huh. we're talking about peak brightness, Jules, we're talking about specular highlights. Yep. So why is that important to the end user?
The difference, or
what is the difference there?
Well, the difference is depending on the display technology. Obviously, some technologies cannot sustain that level of brightness anywhere near it. I mean, if you're talking OLED, you may be talking in the region of 250 nits on screen for a full screen pattern. But obviously, when you can bring it down to more of a pixel level, then it can generate more output. And when you're grading, obviously, when people, as you say, rightly, they do get this misunderstanding. You know, if you mention, oh, this display can do 1,000 nits, they're kind of, cool, blimey, it's going to burn my eyes out. Not everything is 1,000 nits. It's the small specular highlights, as you say, that catch our eye in normal life that are going to be used for that kind of brightness. And the average picture level is going to be much, much lower, maybe to, you know, 100 nits. Or slightly more. So average picture level and peak output are not the same thing. And depending on the display technology, there can be quite a difference between what can be sustained on that panel.
Yeah, and I think it's one of these things that people do get mixed up with, Gavin. And of course, the whole thing about HDR and us talking about 4,000 nits peak brightness and specular highlight detail is the fact that it makes an image look more real. So a sunset, you can actually make out the circle of the sun. You can see the gradation in the color. You can see that there is a difference in terms of, you know, from the brightest part to the darkest part of the image. It just looks more realistic.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And actually, we did have a director speaking about his experience with Sony and movies, which was Joseph Kaczynski as well. And one of the points he was making about the HX3110 is the ability, which seems to be kind of particular for his movies, is recording in something like a cockpit. I think he's doing a Formula One film at the moment. And his point was that this could be really useful to have that, you know, nit level going from 0 to 1,000, because he's shooting a lot of content that's in a dark cockpit, but you can still see the sky and the sun outside. So balancing that is incredibly difficult if you're limited to 1,000 nits, because you want the shadow detail and be able to see what the driver is doing in the cockpit, but you also want to be able to see the blue sky and the light bright highlights as it's whizzing past as well. So that is a kind of a really good example of the potential that HX3110 has to, deliver that creator's intent and allow them to express fully what they want to express. And then obviously the TV in your sitting room needs to be able to kind of do reflect that intent as well. And the Bravia 9 gets pretty close to what the HX3110 is doing.
And that was, I guess that was the point I was trying to make, was to try and get the end user to understand that the reason why this backlight system, why this peak brightness capability is important, is that you know, it gives you more realism, it gives you more dynamic range in the image, and it's not about, you know, blowing your retinas with bright light. It's about this realism. And and that's what's got me excited about Bravia 9, and why I really want to get my hands on it and spend some time with it, because it has potential there. There's not a lot of content out there in 4,000 nits, but I still think, you know, just having that headroom in terms of performance as well with content that's already available.
I thought it was really interesting because we've used Pan a lot for showing off highlights and all the rest of it, but I'd never seen Pan on a master monitor above 1,000 nits. I'd only ever seen it on the HX310. So when I did get to see it on the HX3110, Pan, by the way, is master at 3,000 nits. So it was great to see exactly how Pan is supposed to look, because we all, you know, how many years have we been pointing out as the ship sails into that sun about, oh, what should we be seeing here? And is this right? And actually, that's what it should look like. And that's kind of the benefit of having the additional brightness to deliver more of the color into the scene. So you can actually see what the color the creator intended us to see there as well. But yeah, there's not a huge amount of content out there at the moment, because the workflow in particular has been quite difficult, because you're talking about mastering something on the 310 first and then going over to the Dolby, the Pulse machine, and then bringing it back, going back and forward, where the HX3110 actually will really cut down on that workflow. You can set it to 1,000 nits, 2,000 nits, or 4,000 nits. So that workflow will be much, much simpler for creators as well to be able to see what the effects will be with it. So that should encourage more production of high nit output content in the future too.
Now I know you're not going to talk about nit numbers with Bravia 9, but we are talking somewhere close to what the reference monitor can do, and there is some crossover there with in terms of the backlight technology and algorithms and so on. And I guess the important thing here as well is that you know, when we're talking about 1,000 nit displays and content being mastered at that and so on, these 4,000 nit masters that are out there, and obviously we're hoping that Hollywood are going to take this on and you know, produce more of this high nit content, The beauty there is if the TV is capable of it, if it has the process and it has the algorithms, there's much less tone mapping. And this is one area where we have seen variances from manufacturer to manufacturers in how that TV tone maps that content down to the native value of the display.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's always the argument, you know, clipping or roll off and all of that as well. So that obviously if you're display can display these higher numbers, then you're going to exactly get what the creator intended you to see as well.
Excellent. So that's Bravia 9. It's really exciting product this year. Now, before we go into Bravia 7, Bravia 8, what I want to ask you at this point is two questions that popped up on the forums, and forum members have asked me to ask this. First of all, 75 and 85 inches in Bravia 9, but no 65 inch in the UK. Yeah, it is available in a 65 in the US. So can you maybe tell our listeners and viewers why that's the case there?
Yeah, so it's never an easy decision about what models that are available. It's quite a complicated process between lots of discussions between our partners, our retail partners, with Tokyo as well, and looking at the model mix that we have. So I do understand there's been a little bit of frustration about the lack of 65 inch. I totally get that, actually. So at the moment, yeah, it's just 75 inch and 85 inch. What we will do, of course, is you know, listen to the feedback that you guys are giving us and that the public is giving us, and see what we can do in the future. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee anything, but it's something we are looking at about the potential. But at the moment, yeah, and for the foreseeable future, 75 inch and 85 inch only, due to those kind of factors that are sometimes not 100% in our control. But it's, you know, it's a worldwide business. We're dealing with lots of different countries out there, lots of different retailers, and some decisions we do have to take.
Excellent. So hopefully that answers it for a lot of our listeners and viewers out there. The other thing was, there's a bit of clickbaiting going on at the end of the year in terms of, Sony are dropping OLED and, you know, the new flagship's just going to be a mini LED and what's happening. So maybe you could put people's minds at rest here. You're not dumping OLED, are you? You're not forgetting about that technology.
No, especially, you know, we've just launched an OLED model. We've just launched the Bravia 8 as well. But we kind of understand that, you know, sometimes those titles can attract some viewers in to watch it. But obviously A95L, which we launched towards the end of 2023, has, you know, a lot of the very kind of similar spec and features that we see in Bravia 9, 8 and 7 as well. So A95L was kind of almost, you could say, it's like a 2.5 version or a 23.5 version compared to a 24 model. That's our flagship QD OLED model. It's been received incredibly well. I think you guys love it as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
Great TV. So that's our kind of our flagship OLED model. And then we have the Bravia 9, which is our flagship mini LED model. And Bravia 9 is the flagship of the lineup as well, because it does sit above A95L, because it's a later, it's a newer model as well. Yeah. But also we feel that mini LED has got great potential because it does offer it's kind of got a wider scope essentially of performance that we can get out of it as well, which is kind of crucial when we're talking about master monitors and 4,000 nits and that kind of stuff. So we're really happy with the Bravia 9 being our flagship model as well.
So does that mean that we might see a potential for a Bravia 10 that's QD OLED in the very near future?
I couldn't possibly be drawn in any such rumours and speculation, Phil. Obviously, 2024, this is we've announced everything we're announcing for 2024. So A95L continues throughout the year, and Bravia 9 is the top model. Yeah.
Excellent. Right, so let's have a look at the other two models that were announced in LA. Let's stick with mini LED. So Bravia 7... my understanding is it has the same backlight driving technology, just not the same in terms of peak brightness.
Yeah, it's not as advanced. So it's still XOR backlight master drive, but from it doesn't have as many LEDs and it's not as bright as Bravia 9. And I think it's quite obvious when you have the two of them together that there's a nice step up to Bravia 9, particularly around things like haloing and blooming. Now, we still obviously want to respect the creator's intent with Bravia 7 as well. So we do focus on the brightness. We're not sacrificing brightness for, you know, the pure black that you get on an OLED TV. So, yeah, you might see, but it's only really from an angle as well. You might see a little bit more blooming on Bravia 7, obviously, than Bravia 9. But from a performance point of view, Bravia 7 is a fantastic bit of kit. And to kind of put it in where it sits in the lineup, it's you can imagine, although the X90L does continue, it's essentially a replacement for that premium mid model kind of area in the market. So really competitive model and will deliver, you know, fantastic picture quality. And making mini LED more available for more people as well.
Excellent. So that's the mini LED models. And then, like you just said, OLED is here as well in terms of the Bravia 8.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that this is a white OLED, WRGB OLED model. And basically, looking at the specs and so on, I'm assuming that this is a replacement for the A80L from last year.
Correct. Yeah. And it's one of the kind of key things about it for me is the design is much improved from A80L. Not that the A80L wasn't a nice looking TV. It's very stylish. But I think the Bravia 8 just brings the design up quite a bit. It's quite premium looking and has this, as all the new models do, the four-way adjustable stand as well, which is pretty sweet. Improvements as well with Bravia 8 over A80L. It will be slightly brighter than the A80L. Obviously not getting to levels that we see on the mini LED TVs, but there is a bump up in performance for picture quality as well as the design alongside that.
Excellent. And we did mention that there are models that will continue into this year that were around in 2023. So maybe you could very briefly go over those models that are continuing this year.
Yeah, sure. So the A95L, as we've mentioned, that does continue throughout 2024. X90L, X85L, they both continue. So they're both full array LED models. Really good reception for those in 2023 as well. So they're very kind of strong TVs. So it makes sense to kind of carry over some of the models as opposed to just, calling them something else and not making any improvements to the models, which is kind of what you can see sometimes. In addition, then, our two entry-level propositions, the X80L and the X75WL, continue throughout 2024 as well.
Excellent. So that's the full lineup. So let's look at some of the technologies that are available. And then we've been talking about picture accuracy and director's intent and so on. So one of the new features really caught my eye at the press conference was Prime Video calibrated mode. There's been a lot of talk online, some confusion around what this actually does and so on. So maybe you could take us through what Prime Video calibrated mode is, Gavin.
Yeah, so I'll try and keep it as simple as possible. But basically, we've had calibrated modes previously, Netflix calibrated mode, and we have Sony Pictures Core calibrated mode. But Amazon with Prime Video is a kind of a different beast, essentially. So what Prime Video do, what they supply is both video on demand, like movies and TV shows, but also sports as well. And one of the things you don't want to do is use the same picture quality settings for sport as you have for movies and movies as you have for sport. Because if you're watching movies in, you know, a sports picture mode kind of setting, it's not going to look great, and vice versa as well. So what Prime Video calibrated mode will do essentially is apply the perfect picture settings for whatever you're streaming from Prime Video. So if you are watching a TV series, or if you're watching a movie, it will apply particular settings to match that content. Once you finish your movie and you decide you want to watch some live sport or pre-recorded sport that's on Prime Video, it will adjust the picture settings to match that Prime or that sports content that you're watching then. So it's all about kind of, again, it comes into that creator's intent as well. So we're making sure that the settings of the TV match what your creator intends you to see as well. And it will bring into the light sensor into the equation as well. So if you are watching a movie in a very dark room, it can sense that. If you then watch it in a bright room, it can sense that and will again adjust the picture settings to compensate for the brightness of the room as well, so you can still see shadow detail without the ambient light kind of spoiling it. It's very, very clever, obviously, the way it does this. And it not only understands what content you're watching, but it also understands the device that you're watching it on as well. So it can differentiate between watching on an OLED TV and watching on a LCD TV. So it'll differentiate between those two, which is super cool as well. So basically, when you choose what you want to watch, it will look at a couple of different parameters. For example, it'll go, okay, what are we watching here? Standard dynamic range, high dynamic range. What type of content is it? Is it video on demand or is it sports? And then, okay, what has this been watched on? Is it OLED or is it LCD? Once it's determined all of that, it will send down the picture parameters to match that content and match that device and play it as it should be seen. Hopefully I've explained that well.
Yeah, I guess where the confusion is coming in with Prime Video Mode is the fact that with film content, like Netflix calibrated mode and so on, everything is D65 white point and Rec 709 for SD or BT2020 P3 for movie content. The confusion lies in the sports side of things because those picture settings should be the same. It's just the motion that's maybe an issue, you know, low frame rate, 24 frames versus sport, which may benefit from a little bit of image smoothing. And the other side of it, where I think some confusion is coming in, is that people are thinking that the TV is auto-calibrating, and that's not the case at all. My understanding, and you can maybe correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Gavin, but basically what Prime are doing is sending an API along with the content, which is basically saying, I know what you're watching because you're on our server. Here is our recommended settings. So if it's SD content, it's Rec 709. If it's HDR, it's BT2020, D65 white. It's the sports side that I think people are having a little bit of an issue with. Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but is that still D65 white, or are they changing the white point to make it look a little bit more like you're sat in the stadium? Because this was a little bit of the confusion.
I don't know exactly what the white point level is set at, but I believe it will. The main focus with sports is obviously the motion side of things, but also I believe it's setting it to a cooler tone, color tone as well, because most sports happen in bright daylight, essentially. Even if it's floodlight content, the lighting is still very, very cool. So as opposed to being warm, you want it cool. So I believe they're the settings. I'd obviously have to double check it. And you can obviously test it yourself when you do get a sample infill to make sure that it's doing what I say it's doing as well. But yeah, you don't want the same kind of picture settings exactly the same as you want for your movie content as for your sports content. I think that is the simplest way of kind of looking at it and explaining it.
Yeah. It does raise some interesting points, Jules, when we get these calibrated modes, because, you know, for a long time we've been pushing for director's intent, and it's great to see these features come along. So what's your thinking from a professional point of view?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me this question. I don't like it, I'll be honest. Look, I'm a purist. I work with people who create content for Amazon Prime. I work with people who produce content for Netflix. As you said, Phil, certainly with film content, you know, it should be 2.4 gamma, Rec 709, D65. Parameters are very clear. That's what I'm setting their grading monitors to. In terms of TV live broadcast, I'm not aware there's any difference. You know, I'm not aware that anybody's broadcasting differently. So changing the white point to anticipate floodlights or whatever, I would struggle with that. So as long as this mode can be switched off is my demand, really. Because when I'm setting, Gavin, when I'm doing calibrations for people, obviously people don't always watch in a dark room. So we do have to make some modification to that, particularly, you know, when they're watching sports, potentially in particular, as opposed to films, they will be watching often in a brighter room. So we would set up, and obviously the Sony allows us to do this Cal Day and Cal Night. We do a brighter mode and a darker mode, so one that anticipates the ambient light, and we do it that way. So I'd often with an ambient mode do a 2.2 gamma, still D65. The cameras are not set differently, so as far as I'm aware, anyway. But so long as, and this goes back to the original one, it's like, you know, as long as we've got a calibratable mode that can be like, as a professional caliber, I can dial in. Then you can have Vivid, you can do whatever you like with all the other ones. So, you know, if an end user wants to use this mode, then you know, go ahead. But so long as I can switch to a calibrated mode that I've set up for the client, I'll be happy.
And absolutely, you can. Yeah, I think that's. I think you're probably not the target market for this.
I was just about to come in.
Yeah. There we go.
Hard to please.
As my lights go up and down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think obviously you can turn it off. So it's not, you don't have to use it, as all of our calibrated modes, you can turn them on or off. And of course, we do have our professional mode as well, which is, as you described, that's the one that's as close as possible to the master monitor.
And then, that's fine.
You've got your Kalman on there as well. So you can do all that magic with it too.
And of course, at the end of the day, Gavin, you're given the end user the choice here. You know, I don't think I would ever knock a manufacturer doing what you do in terms of offering the choice and offering the calibrated modes and so on. But yeah, you're going to get differences of opinion. But like you say, if there's an off button and people can still get that accuracy, then it's great.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's great to see those features. Now, just a couple other things just to briefly touch on. So video processing, it's one of your strong points. Sony video processing is amongst the best out there. So what can we expect from XR this year with the 2024 models?
Yeah, good point. So as usual, XR processor has been evolving, and we've two new features this year. We've got scene recognition, which essentially is better at recognizing things like forests or fields and that kind of stuff. And then it will adjust the clarity around those, keeping that in mind. The second one for me is a little bit more interesting. It's more advanced face detection. And what this can now do is recognize faces from different angles or from close up or crowds as well. Whereas previously it was a little bit more difficult for the processor, if it wasn't looking at the face kind of straight on, to recognize that it was a face. Also, it could struggle between determining whether it was a human face or whether it was a cartoon face. So obviously a human face, you do want to, you know, make sure that the contrast and the color is correct. On a cartoon face, that's kind of less of an issue. So on the 2024 models, it can determine whether you're looking at animation or whether you're looking at real content with actual human beings in it as well. So that's, not a huge development like we've had in the past, but it's a really, really nice improvement for 2024 and the new models as well.
Excellent. So just wrapping up on the cinema to home, or cinema is coming home. Lots of brands out there, Gavin, suggest that their TVs are used in Hollywood and used in grading suites and all the rest of it. What makes Sony stand out? What is it that makes, you know, your marketing message this year, cinema coming home? What is it that you want to get across to our users in terms of that messaging? And you know, everybody kind of claims, you know, we've seen it in the past, everybody claims that their speakers are used at Abbey Road, or you know, their products used here. What is it that makes Hollywood and cinema coming home important for Sony, and why that's relevant?
Yeah, I think we covered off that quite extensively at the beginning, actually. It is that lens to living room story, and the fact that we're an entertainment company that owns a movie studio, but that also makes the technology that goes behind it as well. So like you said yourself, the lens to living room story of, we make the cameras that are used in not all Hollywood movies, but a lot of Hollywood movies use Sony cameras. They're also used in lots of other kind of, you know, obviously TV shows, et cetera, as well. But kind of maybe applicable is not movie related, but also used in sports, you know, in the stadiums for lots of football across the world as well. But getting back to movies, also then, as you mentioned, the master monitors. So that's really kind of crucial, is that the directors, the creators, the cinematographers are looking at their their TV shows, their movies on a Sony monitor, deciding upon the look and the feel of it, the contrast, the color, all of that is decided on a Sony monitor. And we do have, you know, the vast market share is Sony monitors. There are others available, of course, like the, I feel like I'm on the BBC, there are others available, but the vast majority of them are Sony monitors used throughout the film industry and the TV industry. And that experience, we leverage that and apply that into our TVs as well. So what we're getting is a genuine, you know, lens to living room story, that you're getting the best experience from the film industry in your Sony TV when you have it at home as well.
Excellent. Right. So that's the pitch for the year. Those are the products that are coming. I guess we just need to get the products in and get them tested, Gavin. And I'm very excited for that. And consumers out there, enthusiasts out there, when can they get to see Bravia 9, 7 and 8? And what kind of schedule are we looking at in terms of releases and pricing and so on?
So they're on pre-order at the moment. So you can pre-order from all the usual places, including sony.co.uk as well. Pricing wise, the prices are all up there, but I suppose Bravia 9, 75-inch, 4499, 85-inch, 4999. Trying to remember these in my head. Bravia 8, 77-inch, 3499, 65-inch, 2699. 55-inch 2199, and then Bravia 7, 85-inch 3499, 75-inch 2799, 65-inch 2199, and 55-inch 1899. And yeah, they're on pre-order at the moment, so it will be a number of weeks before they're available to actually bring home with you.
Excellent. And hopefully I'm going to get my review sample very soon, and we can deep dive into that and get some measurements done. And
absolutely.
I'm really looking forward to them this year, especially Bravia 9. Been really impressed with that. Gavin, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. It is appreciated.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks also to Jules. Thanks very much, Jules.
Cheers.
And don't forget, our next episode is the Home AV edition. That's on Monday, the 20th of May. So stay tuned for that. And like I say, head over to AV Forum's podcast channel, subscribe to the videos, and you'll get them every Monday at 7 p.m. And of course, look at all your usual podcast providers for the audio only version. And again, that's available every Monday. Even when there's five Mondays in the month, we've got a gaming podcast. So we've thought of everything this year. You have an episode every Monday. If you've enjoyed the podcast, then please do give it a like and do the usual cliched social media stuff, like ping the bell and all the rest of it. And of course, you can also buymeacoffee.com/AVForums if you think we deserve a coffee. And I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.